welcome to the Dad's Group podcast. I'm Blair, and on this podcast, we aim to build up dads so we can better support our families. And this week, Bernsey and I interviewed Michael Ray. Man, Michael Ray is an absolute legend who became a dad at 49, and not long after his daughter was born, he became a solo dad. And so he shares with us his challenges of that process of becoming a solo dad and raising his daughter without a mum. But he also shares with us how he's led the charge for dads to break the mold and challenge stigmas to being a hands-on parent. This interview was so rich and so powerful, and we could have just literally sat in that conversation for such a long time. It was absolutely amazing. But I'm excited for you guys to hear this episode with Michael Ray.
Welcome back to Dad's Group, Michael Ray. How are you today, mate?
Great, thanks, buddy. And you?
Yeah, not too bad. We've got Blair on the call with us as well.
Hey, yo.
Let's start with a bit of a check-in. How are you going out of 10 today, guys?
Blair, you go first.
Me first? Yeah, sweet. I reckon I'm rocking a 9 today. Some good stuff happening within Dad's Group, which is getting me pumped up. Just family life is awesome at the moment, and I'm in a good headspace. So, yeah, I'm rocking a 9.
Oh, gee. I reckon I'm a solid 8, only because my coffee's worn off and it was an early start this morning. And
yeah,
my daughter's been away on school camp now for 5 days up in Canberra, and it's the longest we've ever been apart. So,
wow.
Yeah.
How are you coping with that?
Mate, not as good as what she would be. She's a heartless little kid. Yeah. That gives me no sympathy. Dad, you'll be right.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's funny. The house is quiet, and, you know, you get up and there's not the school rush and the school pickups and all of those things, and you just realise how much time these little people actually take up.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I'm going to hijack this for a minute. Sorry, Bernsey, but you've sort of blown my mind a little bit here, Michael, just when we were chatting just before. And I need to ask this question again because we hadn't pressed record yet. And I don't know if it's just me and this is a common knowledge question, but why is the sky blue?
It's the reflection of the water back onto the sky.
Reflection of the water. Like, seriously, my mind is blown on that. I love that. That's awesome. All right, back to you, Bernsey.
It's the things we find out from our kids' questions, isn't it?
100%.
So good. Love it.
Mate, Michael, I wonder if you've been part of our Dad's Group chats before, but for those of the dads and listeners that haven't come across you and your work before, how would you introduce yourself and your family and your work?
I've got no doubt I would have sleptwalked into a typical heteronormative breadwinner, mum runs the house type thing, because that was my example when I grew up. Dad worked really hard, mum ran the household. I didn't become a dad until 49 years of age. So, you know, my looks and personality had a lot to do with it, but I also led what would be called a pretty colourful life coming up to that age, where I used to do security and bodyguarding. I looked after every rock group that came through town in the late 80s, early 90s, everyone from Bon Jovi through to Bruce Springsteen. I was the bloke.
Wow.
The girls at bay, and I was a doorman at some fairly well-known nightclubs in between. So Footloose, Fancy Free, travelled a lot overseas as a strength and conditioning coach in between that. 49, suddenly became a dad and realised that, I had absolutely no preparation for it. My whole preparation for becoming a dad was, I think my mum's instruction to me was, one day wait till you see how you like it when you become a parent. And I thought that would all pass me by. So short-term relationship, dad at 49, single dad, 6-8 months later than that, and then the sole parent to my daughter when she was about 19 months old, with a mum no longer in her life whatsoever. And then, you know, suddenly the world of outdated gender stereotypes and expectations sort of became glaringly obvious at my daughter's 4-year-old ballet concert when they banned me from going backstage to assist her at a ballet concert simply because I was a male. And that's when it made me realise, like, gee, as much as we want women's equality, unless we enable, encourage and expect men to be equally responsible, it's just not going to happen. And then, you know, the workplace issues would come in. You know, at one stage paying more than my mortgage in child support, in child care. It just wasn't feasible. Flexible work wasn't a thing in the male-dominated industries. I was a strength and conditioning coach at AFL level at that stage, and it was just, you know, no flexible work, no work from home, none of those sort of things for blokes. And then it just made me realise that as much as we want to think that we've progressed, that outdated, offensive, Homer Simpson type caricature of dads as bumbling buffoons is what leads schools to call mums first. It's what shames mums who don't do the majority of the caring and denigrates and doubts dads who do. And all of those things just belong in the rubbish bin of history.
Mate, I love what you're saying there. Like, that's been a real challenge for me. And I know I'm an odd one out here to an extent, but I really don't want my kids to watch The Simpsons for that reason. Like, I don't want them to be able to, like, to see this show and have that as an example of a dad. Obviously, I'm their example of a dad, but I don't know. I think it's just, it hits me in the face quite a lot when I see that as an example that's out there. But I wanted to go back a little bit there, Michael. You mentioned about your colourful experience, you know, before having Charlie. And what I wanted to know is, like, so Charlie was unexpected, right? Unexpected. So unexpected pregnancy with such a colourful work experience. How did that shock you? Like, I feel like that's just such a shock. You know, you're traveling the world, you're doing all these different things. What was that experience like when you first found out?
It's funny, Blair. It didn't seem real coming up. I was wrapped. I was excited. I was over the moon.
Yeah.
I work with kids a lot through my strength and conditioning, you know, coached a lot of kids, and I was always king of the kids. I'd much rather kids than the majority of adults that I used to interact with. But, it was just all positive. I was excited beyond all get out. And it was, you know, I'd lived the life of Riley up until then. I'd done everything to the point. And then at 49 years old, it was just getting, I would have looked a little bit sad from the outside to most people still trying to maintain that youthful, vigor lifestyle, I think. So I was more than ready for it.
Do you think that lifestyle impacted your fatherhood today?
Oh, 100%. You know, I've done everything. I've survived a lot of stuff that I probably shouldn't have survived. I've made every mistake known to man and got through it, and still here. And I was really lucky at one stage when my daughter's mother and I first separated. I had a small car accident, and through that they found out, just a basic neck scan, found out that I was critically ill. And that, I call it the gift of clarity that often only comes through a crisis, where suddenly when the doctor was speaking to me in the hospital, it was like my whole life was a house that I'd built and furnished and put everything into, and everything that I thought was important was in there. And then suddenly the joint was on fire. There were flames coming through the roof and smoke billowing out the windows. And I was forced to decide, out of that whole place that I'd built and furnished and filled with things through my life, what was it I was prepared to actually try and rush in to save? And the only thing that came to mind at that stage was the impact it was going to have on not only my daughter, would she even remember me at that stage if I didn't make it through, but my parents and my friends, and the damage I would do to them. And once you've looked into that abyss, there's not a lot in life that, you know, gets up your nose anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Michael, I wonder, again, just rewinding back to that identity shift of, you know, this lifestyle that you had to then finding out you're going to be a dad. Did you have a sense at that stage of the sort of dad that you were going to be before Charlie was born? And then take us 19 months later to when you're a solo dad. Like, did that opinion or image of the sort of dad you're going to be, did that change or shift?
Adam, I often start my talks off with saying, this isn't the first time I've stood before a group of people, parents, dads, and profess to be a parenting expert full of wisdom and the font of all knowledge when it comes to parenting. I've never done it since I've actually become a parent because I realise what a fool I used to be. We all have this idea of, I'm going to be this dad and that dad, and none of it takes into account our child's personality. None of it takes into account the change, the phenomenal life-altering change in us as people that happens the minute that bub's there, and then suddenly it's like, you know what? I had this idea and that idea and this idea, and now I just want to hear this kid laugh. I just want to get cuddles. I just want to see that smile, and I'll do anything. I'll put the silly hat on, anything. Just, it's like, that's my drug of choice now, is to get those giggles and those cuddles and things like that. So the sort of dad I thought I would be, and again, I wasn't that worried because my daughter's mum had three kids from a previous marriage. So the idea was, as long as I did what I said and was told, as long as I was the best assistant in the world, then, and earned good money and provided, then I was a great dad.
Yeah.
And then I would start thinking to myself, I think I would do something different. But again, I wasn't allowed to do something different. So that maternal gatekeeping kicked in and it caused a little bit of tension in the marriage. But then it would be, well, I want time with my daughter on my own, but you don't know what you're doing. Yeah, you're sort of right. And I was convinced that it was a lot harder than what it was. And I say to dad, we grow up in that zeitgeist of only a mother's love, maternal instinct, mother knows best, mum approved, mums trust this brand, and at best we're a willing assistant, and if we do what we're told, we're a great dad. And we've learnt now that when women come into organisations, their style of leadership might be slightly different to men's, but when women first came into the C-suite, they used to try and lead like men did, with that command and control. Well, dads need to take their own initiatives. We've got our own stories to write, our own influences to use, and we know that children with involved, engaged, and present fathers have a lot better outcomes in a range of different important areas. So there's got to be something in it, and we've got to be able to have that conversation with our partners that you've got your way, I've got my way. Just because I don't parent like you doesn't mean it's wrong. As long as we've got that, authoritative style of parenting, the means at which we achieve it, as long as we're warm and engaged and whatever, it doesn't matter if dad has a bit more fun and mum's a bit more serious or vice versa, or mum roughhouses or dad does or whatever, the combination together, the diversity within parenting is good, as long as it's within that same parenting style. And there's only four parenting styles. So there's that authoritarian, authoritative, permissive and negligent. And while we obviously know negligence no good, and it's very easy to slip from one into the other. So authoritative is a good one. So we've got set guidelines and expectations, but we enforce them warmly with clear explanations, make sure they're understood why. We don't want to be authoritarian where it's my way or the highway, and not a lot of warmth and punishment when you do wrong rather than explanation. But it's easy to slip from one in to the other. So I'm great, I'm authoritative, I'm explaining things. Suddenly we're on, like, put your shoes on now, do this, do that, come on, we're going. And then you get to the other thing, or the permiss, you're just tired, you've had a big day. Can I use the iPad for 6 hours? Yeah, go ahead. So, we don't stay rooted in that one. And then the negligent one, we hope that doesn't happen, but it's, dad, can I juggle the knives? So, we worry about whether dads parent differently to mums, But mums parent differently to mums. You know, culturally, their situation, circumstance, how they were brought up by their parents. Most of us parent like our parents. Some of us are good parents because of our parents, and some of us are good parents despite our parents. But this whole dads do it differently to mums, mums do it differently to mums as well. So, you know, just relax.
And I think you've hit on a key point there, Michael, in terms of the communication that needs to happen, whether or not you're still with your partner or if you're doing the solo dad journey. Like, I think every child deserves for their parents to be communicating about, okay, how are we doing this? And if you have your style and I have my style, what are the absolute base needs that need to be covered off? And, you know, and that was certainly my journey when, with my wife, of, all right, like, I'm going to do my own thing with him, but what absolutely needs to happen? He needs to be fed. He needs to be changed. He needs to have water at some point, sunscreen at some point. Okay, I can do those four things. Everything else, well, I can bring my own flavor to that because that's not going to impact his livelihood per se. So I really love the way that you illustrate that, and particularly referencing those styles of, again, like, every mother mothers differently. So why can't the dad parent differently within that relationship as well?
Yeah, it's funny, Adam, I was doing a talk and dad actually showed up and he had three pages. His wife had gone away for an overnight with the girls. And it was nearly an hour by hour schedule of what needed to happen. And I said, mate, you're kidding. Like, and he said, yeah, like, how do I approach this? And I said, well, do you follow this? And he said, no, not when she's not there. I said, do you tell him? Said, don't be stupid. Like, see, this is part of the problem is women are under pressure to do this, because then when they say that, you know, the patriarchy does all this stuff and all the rest of it, it's this outdated thing that say that women must do all this. And I've sat in big groups of women for long amounts of time as the only bloke, so I've become both a peer and an observer. So when you're sitting in that ballet hallway waiting for your kids in class and you're there for a couple of hours with and being the only bloke, you listen and you think, you know what? The mums have exactly the same fears, doubts, dreams, aspirations for the kids as what I do. None of them are that secure. But the thing is, if a dad says, I'm not sure, everyone rushes to help. If a mum says it, she's judged as, because of this maternal instinct, not only are you maybe not competent as a mother, but you're somehow flawed as a woman, because the thing is, you know, you just know it's a lot of women are scared to reach out and ask for help, and a lot of men have it piled upon them, like the unsolicited parenting advice that I received. It's just, you know, and that's why I say to dads, you know, when it comes from a well-meaning place, but it also comes from a place like you're a bit of a dill. So next time somebody says to you and you haven't asked, you know what you should do? You say, I do. Thanks for asking anyway. And just leave it at that. And, you know, we've got to embrace the fact that we've got to learn ourselves. We know the negative outcomes for helicopter parenting or snowplow or whatever you want to call it, where we remove all the obstacles and we do everything for our children. Well, it's the same for dads. It's not that hard. As long as you don't drop them, you've got both ends to keep happy. As long as the bottom end's clean and dry and the top end's fed and happy, everything else in between isn't that hard. So, you know, there are that many parenting books that make it sound like something between the theory of relativity and quantum mechanics, and it's just not that hard. Be attentive, follow your soul, and realize that, you know, it's like herding cats. You know, you're not training a puppy. So the one thing I want to get through to dads is this whole ridiculous notion that the day your kid's born is the day you become a parent. That's like saying that the day you walk through the school gates, you become a scholar. That's the day you only begin becoming a parent. And it changes every day. Remember when your kid had started to get a bit willy and keys, keys, oh, look at that, I'm the best dad in the world. I'm telling you now, my daughter's 11. It doesn't work anymore. Now it's got to sit down. You're constantly learning and growing and adapting. And just when you think you've got it right, we've all had it where, no, if I hold her this way and I rock this, she's gone. Suddenly that doesn't work anymore. And you've got to find what the next thing is. So it just keeps changing. So it's not that hard. And if they're a little bit cry, it's natural too. We have good days and bad days. Kids do as well.
Something I wanted to ask, Michael, like you seem like a very confident parent is probably the wrong way of saying it in terms of like we're always learning, but you're confident in that process of always learning, right? It feels like you're at a point now where it's like, yeah, cool, that's the process. When, how did you get to that point? Because I'm listening to your story about, you know, while you're still with your partner, it was more she was shutting down your ability to step up to be in that parent role. Then she leaves and now you've got no choice to be in that parent role. And now listening to you now, there's quite a big difference there. So how did you, what did that process look like? Like what were the steps that you took into becoming a confident, you know, parent?
It happened suddenly with a mum stepping out of her life, no warning whatsoever. So the first night that it was Charlie and I together, I was doing stand-up comedy at that stage, and because I had no support around.
You've done everything, mate. This is amazing.
I was on at the Comics Lounge in North Melbourne. So at 9 o'clock at night, I'm there with a 19-month-old child on stage telling jokes.
Really? And wow.
We had the other comedians, you know, and they'd be doing their set and I'd be at the back, oi, language, kid.
Earmuffs.
I'd put her down and she'd go off and then the other boys had given her a Corona and they'd filled it with lemonade. And she's walking, comes back on drinking a Corona and has somebody even called child services, I don't know. But I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. And then I went and stayed at my mum's house because I thought I cannot be responsible for this kid. And my mum actually sat me down and said to me, it's not that hard. You know, I'm 61, you know, we grew up without seat belts and bike helmets and, you know, sunscreen and all the rest of it and managed to survive. And that's what mum said, you know, you've got this, you've got your rest of your life with the kid, whether mum comes back or not, you've got to do it and just do it your way. You know, I'm sure you're attentive. And I remember sleeping in the hallway because I was scared I wouldn't hear her from my room if she woke up and everything was. And then eventually you start to go, you know what? Today went well, nothing happened, you know, nappy's done, all the rest of it. You get into a bit of a routine, things go along, but slowly you start to relax a bit more and a bit more. And then you realize, you know what? I didn't know at that stage whether it would be just me and my daughter for a week, a month, a year, had no idea. There was no explanation. And I just thought, you know what, I just want to prioritize my time with my daughter. I'm loving this. You know, nothing had ever filled me with a sense of fulfillment and satisfaction as getting to the end of the day. You know, the kitchen's clean, Bub's asleep, you walk in, you look at her asleep. I'm still well up in tears now. Every now and again, she'll wake up and she'll, you know, Dad, you're creeping me out standing there like that. And sorry. And I just thought, you know what, this is it. And this whole men don't feel, men don't care. And I get a lot of the times where I get told, oh, you know, you've got a great feminine side because of all of it. And that's why I say, you know, that's just rubbish. It's a human side.
Yeah.
Compassion, empathy, caring, devotion. They don't have genders. They're a human side. And, you know, I cry more. I've become emotionally incontinent since I've become a dad. I've spent the first 49 years of my life never crying. I've been shot. I've been stabbed, you know, and just, give me another beer, you know, just no hospital for me. And now, you know, the first time I saw Charlie in a school uniform, I lost it. I was getting hugs from complete strangers in the uniform shop. You know, and it was just, you know, I couldn't get my breath. I was sobbing that bad, seeing her like that. And it's, you know, I often say, you know, fatherhood didn't change who I thought I was. Fatherhood's revealed who I was always meant to be. It's given me the freedom to cast off that ego and facade. And that's why I say to blokes, mate, you know how tough I am? I'm tough enough to cry in front of you. I'm tough enough to, you know, say to you, I don't care if you're going out for a drink. I don't want to go. I want to go home and watch David Attenborough on the couch with my daughter because we love it. So good luck to you. You know, you think what you think, but, you know, I'm having the time of my life as a dad.
I love that. That's awesome. That fatherhood reveals who you're always meant to be. That's cool. Can we zero in now on when you became a solo dad, and you've talked about some of these challenges already in terms of, you know, not being able to go backstage at Charlie's ballet recitals, the lack of flexible work arrangements. But what were some of the challenges that you faced or other challenges that you faced as you continued that journey as a solo dad? You know, what were some of the practical things, but then also some of those bigger cultural things that you had to overcome?
I'm sure you guys have experienced it. Change rooms, like parent rooms. We've actually been physically abused, like yelled at. It's just, again, it's a parent's room. The way we're looked upon with suspicion. We've had the police knock on our door. We went for a couple of nights down at the beach, checked into staying upstairs at a hotel. We had the police knock on the door, wanting to know where mum was, because it was just me and my daughter in a single room. And the casual ease at which people can assume the absolute worst you could assume of a person just because you're a bloke, and that uncomfortableness that, that goes with it. I can't understand it. I wrote an article about co-sleeping. I was asked to contribute. And I even had a friend say to me, do you really want to do that? You know what people will think. And this was a friend. I said, no, I don't know what they'll think. I'm hoping they'll think that, you know, if my 5-year-old daughter climbs into my bed in the middle of the night, that, you know, I'm going to do it, because if I'm going to say no, dad needs his sleep, what am I going to say to her when she's 16 at a party and something's gone wrong and it's 2 o'clock in the morning and she wants to call me up? You know, that's, you know, they're sure climb in, it's easier. And we actually had some comments in the article that about that. I don't think it's proper for a man to be sleeping with his daughter in the same bed. Ugh. And, you know, you would never get that with a mum and their child. So toilets were always one. Even as we got older, Charlie, you know, she's like a camel, goes to the toilet before we leave. But me at my age with my bladder, you know, I can't leave her standing outside the men's toilet. So even at 6 and 7, we would still use the parents' room, so that we go into the parents' room, I'd use the toilet while she waited inside of the parents' room. And we would get, she's old enough to go to the toilet on her own, you don't need to be in here. And it's a parents' room. And then I explain to them, I can't leave her standing outside the men's toilet while I go into the toilet. I just wish, you know, we would all embrace, we're all parents, you know, we're all, you know, man, woman, non-binary, whatever it is, step, adoptive, foster, grand, we're all parents parenting. And as much as that horrible, you wouldn't know what it's like to be a mother because you didn't carry her for 9 months, 100%. And any man that's not in awe of their child's mother after seeing what they go through, and pardon me, basically I felt guilty. You know, what Charlie's mum was going through to have her, and it was a fairly uncomplicated birth, but you just had that, you know, what have I done? You know, I've got it easy, and, you know, everyone's patting me on the back, well done, Dad, and I'm sort of thinking, great. But as much as I could never understand it, and I wouldn't, I'm in awe of it, but I'm always amazed by the great certainty and clarity that they have about the lesser value of my love, my connection, my devotion to my daughter, because I didn't carry her. And that's why I say, you know, you're not just having a go at me, you're actually saying that my daughter's deprived, but you're also having a go at step, adoptive, foster, grand, surrogate, people who've gotten their children through surrogates. It's just ridiculous. You know, one's biology and the other one's devotion, and the two don't depend on each other. But it also, again, it's having a backhanded slap at women who go, you know what, I don't really want to have children. So, again, they don't realise that by doing this, they're having a slap at both sides. And, you know, we just need to stop.
Yeah. Yeah. Something, and let me jump in the gun here a little bit, Burnsy, but I genuinely want to know, because you're just a man full of experience and wisdom, Michael, and this is a question I really want to know the answer to, is, you know, if you could go back to yourself, you're sleeping the hallway, you know, trying to listen out for Charlie to wake up and stuff like that, what is one, like if you could go back now of who you are now and say one piece of advice to you then, what would it be?
It's a good one. You know what? Just relax. Just enjoy it. It's exactly how it's meant to be. So, and it's more about you than your child. It's about, I'm not sure if you've read Viktor Frankl's book about that, you know, the space between stimulus and response. And it's just, we realize once our kids become toddlers, no more leaving the coffee cup on the edge of the table. You got to put things out of reach. And that's why I often suggest to dads, those days when you find your kids pushing your buttons and testing your limits, maybe you need to do the same with your buttons and limits as what you've now done with your coffee cup, and just move them slightly out of reach. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with the frustration and the tired and all the rest of it, but just find that space and go, you know what, if I respond now and if I'm about to say something that's not good, and you see that, look, like we all do it. We snap, and the look in my daughter's face, and you just realize, like, oh, what have I done? The apology is a wonderful thing, and then a great learning experience. That's what I say to my daughter all the time, bub, I shouldn't do that, I'm sorry. And I tell her, I don't care if it's a policeman, a teacher, a friend, anyone makes you feel like you make them apologize, or, you know, it that's on them, that's not on you. Mm. I think at the moment the world's gone a bit cart before the horse, where we're trying to change society so that it doesn't negatively impact our children. Well, I think there's a little bit of insecurity that we haven't prepared our children to positively impact society. So that's why I say to my daughter all the time, you know, but there's going to be people that are silly, that might call you names, but that's on them. And Aristotle said, nature abhors a vacuum. If they're not filled with values and a sense of self, all of that social media, all of that bullying, all that stuff gets in, makes them feel that they're, but if they're full of it, and that's why I say to Bob all the time, you know, the people who banned us from the ballet school, because she's wrapped now that dads can go, she feels really good about it. That's something positive we did. And that's why I say, Bob, that's on them, but that doesn't change us. We did nothing wrong. So, you know, that's what I would say. It's up to me to be a good dad. It's not up to my daughter to be a good kid. So, you know, she's still learning to be a human, and I'm still learning to be a dad. And I always say to we have our performance reviews probably weekly. We put it to bed and we just lie on the bed every night and chat about stuff. And sometimes it's silly stuff. And we used to have stories where we'd start off with Speedy, the fastest snail in the world, and he'd go on a trip and you know, he'd meet a grasshopper that was a kung fu expert and Speedy was a wrestler and just rubbish, and they just go on and cheat a bit. And then there's performance where you go, "Bub, how do you think I'm doing as a dad?" "Oh, Dad, you know, I was thinking the other day I could do with a bit more sugar and a bit more time on my iPad." And I've gone, "Well, it's funny about that, Bub, because I think the fact that you don't get a lot of sugar and you don't get a lot of time on the iPad is what makes me a good dad. So how are we going to work this out?" So we had the performance reviews, and people always say to me, "What are you going to do when she gets to puberty and, you know, starts having her periods?" And so I said, that moment there, it's not about that moment. It's about the relationship and the connection that we've built beforehand, that it makes.
Absolutely.
It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter whether she's smashed my car when she's older, or she's, you know, mucked up with a boy or gotten drunk or anything like that. I'm hoping that I'll be the first person where she thinks, "Shit, I need dad. You know, I've mucked up." And, you know, I'm probably going to need a face full of Botox. So I just, it's okay. On my face. You know, that's the thing I wish that I had known before, that it's a journey for me. You know, it's wrong to expect her to be the only one that grows and matures. I've never done this before, and, you know, I'm still learning now.
Michael, what I'm really appreciating out of what you're sharing is, like, I get a real sense your philosophy, not just with parenting, but like in life, is I'm not just going to sit back and focus on the things I can't do, but actively look to the things I can do. And, you know, like the not being able to go backstage at the ballet, like, "Well, what can I do about this?" rather than just accepting that, "Oh, well, I can't do that." Or, you know, the change rooms or all of these things that you've addressed and really challenged. It's been about that focus on what can I do about this situation rather than focusing on what you can't. And I think, again, like talking to any father figure, that is such a powerful way to approach your child, of instead of going, "Well, I can't breastfeed," or "I can't, you know, do A, B, or C. What can I do with and for my child right now?" I think that's such a powerful way to approach it.
Yeah, 100%. The main thing with my daughter, because I had a lot of people say, "Mate, like, you can understand it." And I'd say, "Well, I can, but I didn't create the problem with the ballet school." So at that stage, we were going through the marriage equality debate. So suddenly we're at the point where we realise that, gee, one day we're going to have two mums, two dads, whatever configurations what there are. And the ballet school, what they had done, had gone, like, "Well, we're just going to have it for mums because that's how it's always been." But then I said to them, "You can't." They've gone, "Well, it's child protection because the little girls might be uncomfortable with a man backstage." And I said, "Well, there are two boys in the class. Are they uncomfortable with all the mums?" And they said, "Oh, no, it's child protection." I said, "Well, I have my working with children license, a swim coach for many years." And that's what I said to them. "And if it's really child protection, what you're saying is my daughter will be the only child without afforded the luxury of having a parent there to protect them. So is it about protecting everyone's child bar mine?" And then I said to them, "It's not about me. It's not, this isn't one of those horrific, abhorrent men's rights things. It's me or it's no one. It's not like I'm saying I want to do it. My wife could do it. It's me. I'm her only parent. I'm 100% responsible for her, about 60% capable on a good day. But it's me or it's no one. And I can't have my daughter sitting there and looking around going, with a parent, with a parent, with a parent, with a parent, and here I am on my own." And that's what broke my heart. And I said, you know, my daughter cannot be singled out for her family situation. So just as much as a child being teased because they have two mums or two dads, or excluded from groups, or not invited to parties because they have a disability, and my daughter cannot be the only one. So I said to them, "I've got no problem if you want to have a separate facility, a separate change room, but you need to accommodate everyone." And the silly thing was, it was at a performing arts centre that did have male and female change rooms. So they could have gone, "Everyone, change in your room where you're comfortable, and then come back to the backstage area, and that's it. But luckily, like Sarah, I was one of the girls. You know, I used to do a lot of the girls' ballet buns because I went and had lessons. I was really good at it. And the other mum said, if Michael's not allowed backstage, we're not allowed backstage either. So, you know, thankfully the media exposure, one of the ladies there knew Susie O'Brien from the Herald Sun. I got a call from her later in the afternoon. Then I got a call from Kate Jenkins, the sex discrimination commissioner, telling me it's against the law. Then it hit Channel 9, Channel 7, BBC, and it was fair to say when I walked back into that ballet school, it was a little bit that escalated. And since then, and then it was just, and that's where the media stuff comes from. It's just, I kept contact, and every time it seemed to do anything with fathers, it reached out, and then it just snowballed from that. I got asked to speak at a couple of things, and then it was just, you know what? And someone said to me, well, what makes you the expert? I said, I actually think I'm the anti-expert. I think I'm, if a mug like me can do it and manage, anyone can do it. So, you know, I'm not an expert. I'm not a child psychologist. It's just parenting. It's not that complicated. It's the best thing, the most fulfilling thing. It doesn't matter what happens outside of the house, good, bad, or indifferent, getting home and hearing that, Dad, it's just the best. It makes everything, it makes life more colourful. Your work's more important because it's got a purpose. Your weekends are exciting. You know, I've got to feed giraffes and swim with seals and Disneyland trips and all of these great things that I just wouldn't have done as an adult.
That's awesome. So, you know, this has been a growing point for you for 11 years now. That's quite a long time to pop a lot, but you're also seeing progress and everything else as well. What are you looking forward to from here?
It really seems like we've grasped the concept of parenting. I think there's still some inertia there. We see people, we just need that and. So ands are connective, so it's great. So when we hear about the motherhood penalty, then we need and the fatherhood forfeit. So when we hear about the lack of flexible work options for women and fathers, and so we just need to tie the two together, because the equality narrative is the only behavioural change initiative that asks those that we actually need to change, those that we want to endure the uncertainty and stigmas of both cultural and personal change, to do it for the benefit of others. Men need to do this because women will benefit. No, start telling men what's in it for men. You know, like there's so much for us and our children. You know, we're not slaves to our work. You know, imagine when we talk about the gender pay gap, imagine when you can come home and go, because your wife earns as much as you do, and go, you know what, my boss is a bit of a knob. I really don't like my work. I hate it. I love the kids. Instead of paying this $2,200 a month in childcare, because you earn a good wage and you love your career, what about I stay home? And because there's not going to be any stigma on you, and because I don't really care if blokes say, well, you're not a real man if you're not earning it, because I'm comfortable and secure in myself and I don't care about that. That's where society will go. And suddenly our children's experience will change their expectations. Instead of, you know, well, when I grow up, I'm going to be a good dad because I'm going to earn good money. When you speak to adolescents and you say, what's a good dad? Earns good money, has a good job, nice house, nice car, all the rest of it. That stuff locks you in to stuff that's hard to get out, with the average age of Australian fathers being 33. If you start off as a building apprentice at, say, 18, and suddenly 15 years down the track, you're on a work site, flexible work's not an option in a lot of the male-dominated industries like construction, transport, all the rest of it, and you want to be a hands-on dad, you know, you start trying to go into a part-time job as a dad. I think the stats were pre-pandemic, only 38% of dads out single dads not in the workforce, only 15% working part-time and the rest full-time job. That's a shocking level of unemployment in single father households. And then again, you still struggle to be a dad.
It's really interesting. Like that was mine and my wife's experience. She was actually earning more money than me at one point, and that was when I was able to stay home with the kids, like, which was great because it was kind of post-COVID in Victoria, and a lot of my job kind of became redundant, whatever. Amy got to work from home, earning a lot more money than me, and then I had a year with the kids. It was great. Like and what I love about your experience as well, and you sharing that, is because the year that I had at home with the kids brought to the surface so many of my issues, you know what I mean? Like so many of my parenting issues, which I would not have been able to deal with because I would have just been kept busy, kept going to work, kept going, you know, doing what we were doing. Because that's the thing is you have a, you know, tough time with your kids, but then you go to work, you know, you get to switch off from home life. But when you're at home with the kids, you don't switch off from that. You, and so all these things that I had to deal with, like I would get extremely overwhelmed, but I can't just stay overwhelmed. I have to do something about that. And so, yeah, the experience that I had, I am so thankful for the season, like the day and age we live in now, because that was a reality for us. Amy was earning more money than me. I was not in a mental healthy state, stable state. And so I got to stay home with the kids, recover, but also grow as a dad and be intentional with those things, which has now sparked my passion with Dad's Group and all the different activities that we do now. So, yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's great. What I'd say to dads, you know, it changes you. It changes you both hormonally and neurologically, the parts of the brain that light up for empathy and attention and all the rest, of it, especially more so with dads and daughters. It rewires your brain. So
yeah,
for all those guys that say, oh, you know, I don't know, your testosterone drops, which makes you more caring and empathetic. Even things like prolactin, which is what increases in women and helps them breastfeed, it actually increases in men as well. We don't breastfeed, but that causes an even more lowering of our testosterone. So you may doubt yourself now, but I think it was Heraclitus said that no man ever steps in the same river twice because he's not the same man and it's never the same river. And that's what caring does. And the more you're exposed to it, the larger the magnitude of the change is. So that explains our dad bod. You know, I tell my daughter all the time, I look like this now because of you. But it even changes our humour because when we have high testosterone, men's humour is a little bit aggressive, so it's used as verbal jousting. So that's why we take the piss out of each other all the time. You know, it's nice haircut, you know, only a face a mother could love. So it's a bit of verbal jousting. But when our testosterone drops, we're still funny as anything, but suddenly it turns into dad jokes. It becomes puns and all the rest of it. But then they've even found that helps our children's linguistic skills because it's like jazz is to music, dad jokes are to language because it's literal and it's figurative and it's double meaning and entendres. So it teaches our kids not just to look at the literal meaning of a word. And so all of these things kick in. That's why I'd say we're built and wired and nature had us up for this dad gig all the time. And it's just this ridiculous, outdated gender bullshit that has tried to convince us otherwise.
I mean, I've got so much funnier since being a dad, but the thing is, that's only in my opinion. Like, it hasn't translated to anyone else yet, so I'm waiting for that day.
No, it's just that no one around you has a sense of humour, Blair.
That's true, mate. That is so true. Like, the world hasn't caught up.
Blair, my daughter all the time says, Dad, you're just not funny. I've gone, Bub, I used to be a professional. People pay money.
Laugh. That's the main thing is I laugh at myself. That's good. Mate, you know, going through the solo dad journey, did you have other dads get around you that were journeying in a similar way or in an intentional way with their fatherhood?
Blair, I often say to suggest to dads, you know, it can be fairly isolating because all of the other dads, their wives were doing the majority of the dadding, so the parenting. So even to organise play dates. Oh, yeah, I'll have to see. But again, it feels awkward. I'm awkward and self-conscious all the time, but I'm okay with it. So that's why I said, it's just how it is. But to organise a play date for Charlie, she said, oh, Dad, you know, can I have a play date? Well, I'll have to see her mum because I don't have a phone book full of friends. And it's really awkward. So you'll go up and say, oh, you know, Charlie'd love a play date. And the usual response is, well, I'd see what my husband's doing. I've gone, well, I don't want to play with him. My daughter wants to play with her. I will see what it's doing. But because most of the dads are still, especially at my age, and they're a lot further up, at work all the time and all the rest of it. So, and it is awkward asking for a mum's phone number because you don't want it to be misinterpreted and all the rest of it. But I often suggest to dads, you know, we like to think we're capable of that, do anything for my kid, or walk through fire, nothing will stop me being the dad, except for maybe feeling a bit awkward or uncomfortable.
Yeah,
you know what, just get used to it. They're awkward and uncomfortable as well as you are, so you're both doing it. But most of the time, we're telling ourselves stories about what we imagine the stories they're telling themselves about you, and none of it's based in reality. So just step up and do it. So, but I was happy to be with my daughter, and, you know, a day at the beach or a walk in the bush, or, you know, she used to come everywhere with me because we had no choice. So she's helped around the house. She's cooked and cleaned, and, you know, we put music on and we rock, and, you know, everything's been fun. So the whole, I don't have time to exercise, and, you know, don't have this, but again, I was in a really fortunate position to be able to afford to do it and, you know, work for myself so I could set my own hours. But there were a couple of jobs I had that, you know, they weren't supportive at all. And it was just, you know what, I noticed mum's working flexibly, and, you know, I've done it. And there are so many organisations at the moment dislocating their shoulder, patting themselves on the back about how good are we with extended parental leave for dads. And then when dads get back, the minute there's a doctor's trip or a sick day or a school day, they're like, oh, you know, and that's why I say, you know, puppies and kittens aren't just for Christmas, and dads aren't just for paternity leave. You know, they both have ongoing thing. You know, get fed income about it and just go, you know what?
Yeah.
And that's what will advance mums, because as much as we like to say, well, there are laws that say you can't do that, if you're an organisation, you go, you know what? Young dad, young mum, she might come and go because parenting, but dad, he's going to work hard to provide. You know what? If you've got to be fed income down the middle and provide both to both, then it takes away an incentive to go, you know what? Let's hire the young dad rather than the young mum. So that's what we should be pushing for dads. And every time a dad steps out, it leaves a vacancy for a mum to be able to step in. So that's where we keep missing it. Policies and procedures are easy on paper, but culture is what, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So a lot of the places, your paternity leaves like Fight Club. Yeah, we've got it.
Yeah.
You know, don't sell. Really? You're going to take the full 6 weeks? Are you sure? More like you take it when you get back, straight back into, rather than would you like to come, when you come back, do you want 3 days, 4 days? Do you, you know, want to step back into it? And that's why I say, you know, if you've managed to become important and irreplaceable and vital within your organisation, you know, involved in the minutiae of every direction and decision that's made, and not within your family, both you and your organisation are managing the wrong things, because you have your best team on the field 100 minutes of every game. What happens when someone's injured? You know, and you want to see a productive, engaged employee. Show me a bloke going through a divorce or having family problems at home, or who's just racked with guilt because his kid in the morning has gone, Dad, come on, grand final, school sports, whatever, can't you come, please? Yeah, they're not that productive. They're not that engaged, and you're not going to keep them.
Yeah.
I wonder if I can wrap up with this question, Michael. You know, you were talking about some of the corporate speaking gigs you've been doing with these big multinationals. what sort of impresses you, or what stands out to you about where fatherhood has come since you became a dad? Like, what are you seeing in new dads today that you're really excited about? And what's left in terms of ground that we need to stake for fathers?
Oh, you know, great question. These big multinationals I've got to speak with all over the world, they realize now, that's why I say to them, show me another policy that you've put in place that has a poor take-up rate. If you had another initiative, a marketing campaign, and the return, if you had 5%, which is what most of the paternity leave is around, about 5% of people take it, would you just go, oh, that's obviously the customers? No, you wouldn't. You go, we need to rejig this so that it's fit for purpose. And if the men aren't game enough to do it, because the biggest, we hear it and we read it and everyone knows it, the biggest regret on the deathbed is time with our kids. You can't get it back. It's irreplaceable. And I can say without reservation that 100% of the dads that I've spoken to who have taken up the chance to be fully involved, engaged, and take their full, is 100% satisfied they did. Once that they set their routine and, you know, things like that, and they calm down, and it's like, great. It's like, it's not easy, but work's not easy. Anything worthwhile's not easy. A fitness regime, anything like that's not worth it. But you never get a second chance to see a first or a last thing that you could do, because there are so many of them. But once you embrace it, and then it makes everything else easy going along, because it's just time in role. So, it, you know, you come home, mum's been all day with a kid, kid won't settle. Oh, do, no, you don't do it like, you do it like this. It's not because she's better connected to the kid. She's just done it more often. And once you go, you know what, I've got the confidence. Well, this isn't working. Well, let's try something else. It's not that, gee, I'm no good at this. It's just I need to rejig it. So we're at that point now where things are changing, and we've either got to jump to get across that chasm, but it's just until men start to actually have that confidence in themselves to go, you know what, it's not maternal instinct, it's not mother knows best, it's just we're all parents, and it doesn't matter. My love, my devotion, my connection with my child is just as important, attachment to a child is just as important as mum's, and my daughter or my son, my child will be, you know, better off with a solid connection with both of us. Our relationship, you're less likely to get divorced if you share in all of this stuff. So who doesn't? It's just when it's good for women, it's good for men, it's good for kids. We live longer. Gee, like, what's not to do? But for too long, we've just gone, you know what? We need to get women into the workforce, and we need to do it in a way where they can still keep caring, and then we wonder why women are burning out. You know, trying to grasp all of these opportunities, and you've still got one hand full of caring, and we just cannot grasp. You know what? Childcare. Gee, childcare's hard to get, and it's expensive and all the rest of it. Well, if dad's working 3 days a week or 4 days a week and mum's working 4 days a week, then there's only 3 days of childcare. It's just, why haven't we looked at men as the underutilized resource here to advance things? Because if we really want more caring, empathetic, emotionally and empathetically intelligent men, then we've got to provide them with more opportunities to care. It changes us for the better.
Such a good point to end on. Michael, thanks for your time with us today. If any of our dads are wanting to follow you, connect in with you, where can they find you?
I'm probably the most prolific on LinkedIn, but I've got a website up, michaelray.com.au, and there's a Facebook page, but we had to shut it down. It got hijacked by these rat
classic
fans. Mark Zuckerberg won't return my calls, so.
Me either. Me either. What a jerk.
I'm going Come back on, to mate. MySpace. Customer That's service. Still a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of, for sure.
Michael, it's been absolutely awesome. I know I speak for Blair as well in saying that. We just love sitting at your feet.
And yeah.
Hearing your stories, hearing your experience, your wisdom. You know, hearing from a dad who's survived past those early years and still thriving.
And there's a book too.
There's a book.
I saw that on your website. I was going to ask you about your book. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm probably the only bloke who's ever written a book that's never actually read one. So
that's an experience for you, man. No, now you have. You've read your own book.
Yeah, and my daughter's written her own book as well. So that's on the website as well about her experiences. So, you know, she's a little
so good.
Little warrior as well.
Yeah,
so good. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Michael. All the best.
No worries. Thanks so much, Adam. Thanks, Blair.
Cheers, mate. And we also want to thank our listener for tuning in today. If you haven't already, go check out our website at www.dadsgroup.org. In this space, we've got some awesome resources for support for families, new and expecting families. There's a lot of mental health support there by some amazing organizations. On this website as well, you can also support Dad's Group through purchasing our merchandise, or a solid donation would be amazing and help us impact the lives and of new and expecting families all around Australia. But thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next week. Cheers, guys.